Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com. And now you can download our podcasts on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you this morning?
I'm doing pretty good. You know why?
Why?
I had salmon for breakfast. I didn't really have salmon for breakfast. But we have a large gaggle of salmon information for everybody today.
Gaggle?
Gaggle, yeah.
Wouldn't it be more like a school of salmon
School of salmon information? All right, I accept your criticism.
Enough with the bad English. There was an article that appeared in the April 17th, 2006 New York Times in the magazine section that I want to discuss because it's been getting talked about quite a bit recently. And the article was entitled, "Does Eating Salmon Lower the Murder Rate?" Let me give you the synopsis of the article here.
This, just so everybody knows, this is one of those articles that Francis said, "I got this great article we got to talk about." And I said, no, we got to talk about the article I brought in today.
And this is it, brother. "Most prisons are notorious for the quality of their cuisine, pretty poor, and the behavior of their residents, pretty violent. They are therefore ideal locations to test a novel hypothesis that violent aggression is largely a product of poor nutrition. To that end, researchers are studying whether inmates become less violent when put on a diet rich in vitamins and the fatty acids found in seafood. Could a salmon steak and a side of spinach really help curb violence, not just in prison, but everywhere?" In 2001, Dr. Joseph Hiblin, a senior clinical investigator at the National Institutes of Health, published a study provocatively titled "Seafood Consumption and Homicide Mortality" that found a correlation between a higher intake of omega-3 fatty acids, which are most often gotten in fish, and lower murder rates. Check out what he did. 231 volunteers at a British prison in his study, half got a placebo and the other half got fatty acids and other vitamin supplements.
This isn't actually his study. This is somebody else's study.
Right, I'm sorry. This is Bernard Gesch's study from Oxford. Over time, the antisocial behavior in this prison, as measured by assaults and other violations, the antisocial behavior of the inmates who'd been given the supplements dropped by a third relative to their previous records. The control group, which had been given a placebo, the results stayed the same.
Now, let's talk about this for a second. What you've done is you set up a prison population. You put half of them into a group where you keep feeding them what
gruel.
You've been feeding them.
Gruel.
Okay. And you take half of the inmates and you start feeding them better food. Okay.
Well,
and,
actually, he didn't even start to feed them better food because they didn't want to make it, whether it was an
right,
emotional thing or not, they just gave them supplements of omega-3s and vitamins.
Mm-hmm.
So you increase their nutrition and you see a third reduction in violence.
Right. And it's also fairly well documented in the things that I've read that You get better vitamins from food than you would necessarily from supplements. So this isn't even necessarily the best way to do this.
So the implications of this are that now, and they're positing why it happens. It's the criticism of this study is if you take it that food leads to violent behavior, if you accept that premise or if you accept that conclusion, then are people able to get off with
right,
the Twinkie defense? Are you no longer responsible for your actions? And
right,
that's
you
not
could use
correct.
A defense that, well, I was on a sugar high, so I went and shot somebody, and that's why I was particularly violent that day.
You're still responsible for your actions, but if we know that giving you omega-3 fatty acids and good nutrition helps your brain to rein in its your violent impulses. And most of the violence that we're talking about is
right.
committed on impulse.
Mm-hmm.
And we know, like we give kids Ritalin, you know, if they have ADD, because they can't contain, it's hard for them to contain their impulses.
And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about impulse control here. And clearly, based on these studies, and again, these are very, very small studies funded not very well,
But I think we've touched on a really interesting topic here, that the food you eat and the food that we provide for our society will have effects that are much more far-reaching than we anticipate them to be. And this reaches everywhere. This reaches to our school lunch programs. This reaches to a lot of areas that Francis and I have touched on in the past, where you need to deliver healthful and what you have, and a lot of studies and were in very varying degrees in different areas and with different types of food. But generally what they say is, if nutrition is better, then behavior is better.
And if you look at, I mean, I think this really does relate into this other institutional model that we have. There have been studies done on schools, or there have been clear experiences done in schools where, in England, which was leading the way, and in certain charter schools in the United States, you have people that take over school lunch programs and replace the gruel that we all remember, which is the poorly run, crooked U.S. Department of Agriculture supplied awful school lunch program. You should all be ashamed of yourselves who are involved in that. Hold on.
There's a lot of people involved in the school lunch
program. No, I'm sorry. The people in the USDA who are selling our children beef that can't be sold because it's such poor quality that it winds up in the school lunch program.
Okay, they should be ashamed.
Okay. When you see that in the charter schools that have replaced it and the public schools that have replaced it, which in England are called private schools, that the behavior rates of these schools, the behavior changes, academic performance goes up, and not just in increments. I mean, and what's happening is because some of these charter schools are for kids with problems. Mm-hmm. You're seeing problem school populations when someone takes over in these small charter schools and starts bringing in nutritional and healthy lunch, takes out soda and candy and sugar, and brings people good food. You're seeing in school populations of kids with behavior problems, you're seeing them have drastic changes, mm-hmm, in all aspects of student behavior, student academic performance. Why do we not take this very seriously?
Right now, the studies have been very, very small. Let's talk about another study. That was
the Finnish study?
Yeah.
Well, there they had tested prisoners convicted of violent crimes and found that the convicted felons had lower levels of omega-3 fatty acids than healthy subjects. Why omega?
So now they're testing prisoners.
Criminals
who have committed violent crimes. And what they're doing is they're testing the chemicals in their bodies, in their brains.
And they find they have lower omega-3. Check this out. In a recent double-blind trial, when omega-3s, that's the fatty acids found in fish, were given to people with a history of substance abuse, the symptoms of anger in those subjects fell by 50%.
That's a lot. 50% is a lot.
It's important to eat well. It's important to even feed our prisoners well in our prisons, because we are a humane society, and frankly, it will cost less to feed our prisoners well in prisons than it will to enforce laws and to deal with the crimes committed by an unruly prison population. And it's very important to feed our children well. And it's incumbent upon us as a society to make sure that in the schools, the soda companies aren't allowed and the candy companies aren't allowed to give our kids things that we now know, mm-hmm, cause problems for them, cause problems for society, increases in violent behavior, lowering school performance. It's important to feed our kids healthy, real, whole food.
You know, one of the things I really enjoyed about this article is how it concluded. And how it concluded was, we're willing to give our children Ritalin. We accept that by them ingesting this compound, that their behavior is better, and that we know that food, that really good food, can do exactly the same thing.
Demand good food in your schools. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. Our guest today is Pam Schoenfeld. Pam's a nutritionist who teaches individuals how to return to eating traditional natural food. She's chapter leader for the Weston Price Foundation, which is an organization that pursues those very goals. And she also works with Heritage Foods USA, which is an organization that we have worked with many times. And she's here to talk about the nutritional value of traditional diets, and specifically the much maligned role that pork can play in a traditional diet. Hey, welcome to the show, Pam.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate that.
So everybody tells me that pork and pork fat and bacon, those things are all things that are really bad for me, and I should stay away from them.
The worst possible thing you could eat.
Not so?
Do they say that? Oh, that's funny. I didn't know it was the worst thing, but I've heard that it's pretty bad. Actually, I don't believe it's so. There are a lot of traditional peoples that ate pork products. In fact, I was doing some research on this website for the Earth's Elders. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, is that the super centenarians, the people that are really old?
The people over 110 years old?
That's right, and they talk about their life experiences very briefly on the website. And so I made some notes on what some of the people were eating.
And it wasn't granola and Atkins diet, and it wasn't like Swiss Miss shakes and Weight Watcher stuff?
Yeah, I don't think they had those back then.
No Twinkies? Come on.
It wasn't that?
Well, no, that's not what they mentioned.
It wasn't the Miami Beach diet?
No, not even that.
Well, what were they eating to be 110 years old?
Well, it's interesting. I don't know if they're still eating it now, but a lot of times people do keep their old ways of eating. Dairy played a predominant role in most of these diets. In fact, even the people that did not eat meat drank milk.
Hey, can we hold up 1 second? I just want to refer back. If you go to our website, restaurantguysradio.com, you can find the link to the show we did with Dr. Ron Schmid, who's a naturopathic physician who extols the benefits of raw milk. And, you know, for the super centenarians who are 110, for most of their lives, they weren't mostly drinking pasteurized milk. They were drinking raw milk.
And that's right.
And there's great benefits.
And Dr. Ron is on the Weston A. Price Board of Directors.
Oh, really? I didn't know you guys were colleagues.
Yes. Ah. And he's I'm kind of friendly with him because I'm also working on the Garden State Raw Milk Campaign. And
We want to get involved in that. You've got to send us some information about that.
Well, I will. So let me continue on what they were eating.
Yes.
Many of them were eating hogs, which obviously everyone knows is pork.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them were eating seafoods, which we've been told are healthy, which is fine. They are healthy. Some of them were doing hunting and eating things like a possum. Then there was a woman from Italy who talks about how she was eating mussels, picking them right off the shore and eating them for her breakfast, and that she also made sausages and wine. And I think that's really interesting because a lot of times people think the Mediterranean diet has no pork in it. It's just, you know, the olive oil, the grains, the fish.
You know what I love about olive oil? Is when you pour it on the lardons on your salad.
Oh, gosh. Lardons, are those little fried lard things?
No, they're little bits of bacon that are mostly fat with a little bit of bacon in there. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Cool. Yeah, no. So it's interesting. Lacto-fermented sausages, which are sausages that are made through a fermentation process, it's a time-honored tradition in Italy. But we don't really hear about that because the diet dictocrats in our country, that's a term that our president, Sally Fallon, likes to use, pretty much suppress that information. We don't hear about that. And I think it's unfortunate because I was also doing some research on pork sausages and the fermentation process, and it actually is a very good way to supply beneficial bacteria to your intestines.
Well, now, how did pork, do you think, why did it fall in such disfavor among other nutritionists?
Why did it get such a bad rap?
Well, okay, any meat that has saturated fat in it has become demonized, as we all know. And it's interesting, although saturated fat will slightly raise cholesterol, although sometimes it raises HDL more than LDL, given the individual, there has never been a definitive link between saturated fat consumption and heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
And actually 50% of arterial plaques occur in people with normal arterial, you know, problems where you get a heart attack occur in individuals with normal cholesterol level. And most of the fat found in arterial plaques is actually omega-6 fatty acids, which are found in vegetable oils.
Really?
Yeah, really. And it's very interesting. This is also recent research. I mean, it's something that you can find in current literature.
Well, can we talk about the different kinds of fats, or, you know, monounsaturated fat versus, I mean, we hear all these words, polyunsaturated fats, going to trans fats. Maybe you can clarify some of those terms for us.
Well, since we started talking about pork, let me just say that pork actually is more of a monounsaturated fat than a saturated fat.
And those are the ones we're looking for.
Well, that's what people think is better, monounsaturated. Whereas they used to tell you polyunsaturates were good, they don't say that so much anymore. They're pretty much promoting the monounsaturates as in olive oil.
Mm-hmm.
But pork fat, especially from a pasture-raised pork, which is, I believe, what you serve at the restaurant, is a more of a monounsaturate, approximately 50% monounsaturated, like olive oil. And it's about 40% saturated. and the remainder some unsaturated.
No. I think it's very interesting to, that, and we do this a lot, and we talk, because we talk about cured meats a lot, and we have some hams from Spain that are curing for us now that are going to take another year and a half to get here.
Sounds good.
Where, you know, when you talk about pigs that have been pasture raised and eat acorns and grasses and things like that, you have the same, a similar kind of fat to what you find in olive oil, and people think of the pork fat as being worse for you than, say, a Crisco or a margarine, when it's quite possible the reverse may be true. We'll be back to talk more about this with Pam Schoenfeld. She's a nutritionist, and she works with Heritage Foods USA and the Weston Price Foundation. We're talking with her about real foods and whole foods and how it may be counterintuitive what your most healthy option is. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were, you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys radio show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of the Stage Left in Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. And our guest today is Pam Schoenfeld. Pam is with the Weston Price Foundation. She promotes eating whole foods and from a nutritional perspective, and she's also a nutritionist that works with Heritage Foods USA, which is an organization we support that can help you find some really good foods for you.
Well, Pam, and that takes me right into my next question. You were talking a little bit about pigs that kind of graze and pigs that are
pastured
allowed to,
pigs.
Pastured pigs that are allowed to live more normal pig lives, as opposed to, and what we didn't get into is the counterpoint of that, which is the agribusiness pigs that live in kind of factory farms. Can you tell us a little bit about the content, the fat content differences in the two types of pig?
I don't have statistics on the breakdown of saturated fats versus monounsaturated fats, but I do know this. They're probably a little bit higher in saturated fats if they don't get out on the grass, because grass actually does have a lot of beneficial unsaturated fats in it. But the thing is, the vitamin D level in the pork fat itself, I don't know if you're aware of this, but pork fat is a good natural dietary source of vitamin D. In fact, cod liver oil is the only other food that has a higher per weight amount of vitamin D. And vitamin D is one of the most, I don't want to say under-consumed, because most of us know that vitamin D can be made in the skin.
Mm-hmm.
But since we're all running away from the sun like the plague, we're not getting enough vitamin D in our bodies, and we're certainly not taking enough in our diet, so pork fat actually can provide a good source of vitamin D.
But only if the pig has been out in the sun.
That's right. We need to sunbathe, too.
That's funny. And one of the ironies, I just read a study just recently in a magazine called Nutrition Action Health Letter, saying especially in the northern states, that's more important because we get even less sunlight than people in the southern states. I thought that was really fascinating, that some of these things are much more important to women in breast cancer who live in northern states as opposed to southern states.
And African-Americans who take longer to make the vitamin D in their skin. Anyone with a dark skin has a more protective melanin in it that prevents the vitamin D.
Hey, listen, we have to go to the news, but I just want to say, here is news for you. Who'd have thunk it? Pork is healthy. Eat some every day. But you got to get the right kind of pork. And, you know, as we so often find, is the pork that tastes better and the pork that makes the better meal is the pork that's better for you. Isn't that interesting? Our guest is Pam Schoenfeld. She's a nutritionist. We're talking about pigs. We'll be back after the news. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1130.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Our guest today is Pam Schoenfeld. She is a nutritionist. She is the chapter leader for the Weston Price Foundation, which promotes traditional diets and nutrition. She also works with Heritage Foods USA. You can go to our website and find Heritage Foods USA, where you can actually buy a lot of the foods that we're talking about. And we're also going to put a link to Pam's website on there as well, and to Pam's email, where you can contact her about some interesting events if you're interested in getting involved and finding better food and finding out what's better for you.
And Pam, we were just talking right before the news about vitamin D, and I think most of us think about vitamin D. We think about dairy, we think about cheese, we think about milk, we think about things like that. But you're telling us that we can get this from pork, is that and maybe other meats?
Sure. Actually, other meats not so much, but pork fat, because the pig actually creates a vitamin D in the skin just like we do, as long as they're outside in the sun.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually an excellent source. And also, I didn't finish before. I was talking about monounsaturated saturated fats. There's actually some studies on the benefits of saturated fats, because saturated fats are very stable. That's because of their chemical nature versus an unsaturated fat, that there is very little, if any, peroxidation or oxidation. You might have heard of free radical formation, mm-hmm, and aging when you cook with fats like pork fat.
Well, you know, there is a recent study that was quoted in a newsletter that went out from Heritage Foods USA. I just want to quote from it. I don't ask you to comment on it. It says, in a recent study, the amount of acrylamide, which is the unhealthy byproduct created when foods are cooked at high temperatures, the amount of acrylamide generated during the cooking of protein-containing foods in lard or pork fat was 50% less. That's 50% less acrylamide in the pork fat compared to the same food cooked at high temperatures in corn oil, olive oil, or canola oil.
That actually was a piece that I had put into the website,
uh-huh,
and I found that very interesting. I came across that doing the research to write the article for Heritage Foods, but it totally makes sense to me, because we used to actually, in this country, use things like beef tallow and lard to fry and cook almost everything.
Absolutely. That's what our grandparents used.
Yes, and actually restaurants used beef tallow. McDonald's used beef tallow.
Mm-hmm.
And then a certain scientific organization, who I will not name, asked them to change their oils to a vegetable-based oil, kind of demanded it. We don't want these saturated fats. So McDonald's complied, but at that time they used the trans fats. They didn't use vegetable fats.
So that was jumping from the frying pan into the fire, pardon the pun.
And now they're moving to unsaturated vegetable oils due to the pressure of this same scientific organization. And actually, frying in vegetable oils is actually more dangerous than frying in, mm-hmm, saturated animal fats, and people don't know this. They're so afraid of saturated fats that they don't realize the scientific evidence shows that foods don't become, you know, it's fine is never the best way to cook anything, but, mm-hmm, we enjoy fried foods. I eat fried foods. I make my own fried potatoes in lard or sometimes in beef tallow, and I enjoy that. I don't do it a lot, but I'm not afraid of it. I do not eat McDonald's French fries.
Mm-hmm. Let me tell you something.
Oops, I shouldn't have said McDonald's. I love McDonald's French fries. I just don't eat any commercial French fries.
You can say you don't eat McDonald's French fries. There's nothing wrong with that.
Okay.
You don't eat McDonald's French fries. It's a fact.
Yeah, you
didn't say they make you explode if you eat them. You don't eat them.
I don't eat them.
What people may not realize is that you can buy, and actually, if you go to Heritage Foods USA, they will sell you lard.
Mm-hmm.
And to cook in lard, it seems weird to us. It seems dirty somehow. It seems more perishable somehow. And I remember reading, because I've always been interested in food history, when Crisco first came out,
mm-hmm,
Crisco set about, and I think it was well-motivated, because I think according to the science at the time, they believed that, you know, obviously vegetables were going to be healthier for you than meat, so therefore vegetable fats were going to be healthier for you than lard, and also, you know, those vegetable shortenings are shelf stable. And they went around and they rewrote cookbooks. They commissioned more cookbooks than you can shake a stick at.
Yeah, I've seen one of those cookbooks at a an antique store, and I picked it up and I couldn't believe the things that they were asking you to put Crisco in, salad dressings.
Well, but oh, I know, they're crazy. Well, but I mean, beyond that, what they did was they took all the, and in a way they did a wild service in a way by collecting all the great recipes that were out there, but then rewriting them with Crisco instead of lard or tallow or fat. And it's incredible to watch when Crisco came out how they just went over every sector of the market and tried to replace and were very successful in replacing, you know, lard. Who keeps lard in their house anymore?
Yeah, but trans fats are a huge problem. In fact, Walter Willett, and that's what's in Crisco and those types of shortenings.
Yes.
Walter Willett of the Harvard Medical School attributes about 100 deaths per day to the current consumption of trans fats. And our vice president of the Weston A. Price Foundation was doing research in the 1970s trying to make this trans fat problem public, and she encountered a lot of resistance. And I am not I don't hold the manufacturers harmless. I urge everyone who's listening, if they have a chance, to go to the Weston A. Price website and look up the article on the oiling of America, and you'll see that manufacturers knew that trans fats should not have been in the diet when they were introduced through, you know, partially hydrogenated vegetable oils, but it was a lot of the information was suppressed. And we're trying to get the word out that go back to what your grandmother used. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of these people have lived long lives, and they're estimating now that the current generation will not live as long as the oldest generations in our country.
Well, almost everything you look at, if you buy a cookie or a cracker or anything off the shelf in a supermarket right now, that's how it's made.
Yeah, well, they used to use coconut oil and palm oil, and they got really bad. You know, they didn't generally use lard except if it was at a good bakery. They would use the leaf lard in the good pie crust. In fact, chefs to this day still prefer it. But in the boxed stuff for the perishable, they will use palm oil, which you can buy too, and it's extremely, extremely stable, and you can keep it on your shelf just like any kind of vegetable shortening, and it's actually much better for you. I know it's going to be hard for people to believe this because we've heard the opposite for so long,
right.
But you really have to read between the lines and find out why this is happening, because the farmers in this country, you know, they're the small farmers who raise the animals in the way they should be raised, do not have the lobbyists. That the huge corporations have that sell to promote, you know, vegetable oil products that have been processed.
We get to talk about those things a lot here on this show, and we just beat that horse absolutely till it's
not dead yet. We're trying.
We're trying to keep people alive and healthy. And, you know, the thing is, a lot of mothers, I'm not going to blame mothers, but, you know, I was working at a little banquet the other day, and everybody brought their trans fats cookies in.
You know, what's interesting, though, is more than just the trans fat cookies that are out there. There's a lot that now seems counterintuitive because we've been told for so long, stay away from pork fat, stay away from this. And we've been offered as sort of an acceptable alternative, this sort of sterile diet food, fatty kind of food. And if you look at the difference between your grandparents who weren't fat and you who are, you know, or your grandparents' generation who generally wasn't too fat, and the way that styles of clothing have changed, because we as a population are unquestionably fatter and less healthy. Yes, we're less active than they were, but also look at what they ate as opposed to what we eat, and look at Europe in the countries that have not yet embraced manufactured food and what they eat as opposed to what we eat. They eat foie gras and they eat duck fat and they eat all sorts of
some of the fattiest foods in the world.
But they don't eat Oreos and Twinkies and processed foods.
And I think that's what we need to get back to. We need fat is not necessarily bad for you in the right quantities.
Actually, it helps stabilize your blood sugar, and that's the huge problem with trans fats and vegetable fats. They not only promote oxidation in the body, but they actually predispose people to metabolic syndrome and type 2 diabetes. And they've blamed it so long on saturated fats, but it's really more the trans fats in the diet.
And what's funny, they're blaming it on the just exact opposite thing.
You know, Pam, when we come back from the next break, I want you to do me a favor, and I want you to talk to people about the types of foods that they see in front of them that have trans fats in them, and the types of foods that they could substitute in their diets that to eliminate some of these trans fats from their diet and to make themselves and their kids more healthy. Because I think that we all have a problem now with what choices we should be making. You know, years and years we were told margarine's better than butter, and it took a long time for people to realize, no, maybe it's not better than butter. Maybe butter's better than margarine. So when we come back, will you help us make some better choices?
Love to.
Pam Schoenfeld will be joining us when we come back. She's a nutritionist. She's with the Weston Price Foundation, also works with Heritage Foods USA. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45. Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of the Restaurant Guys radio show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to RestaurantGuysRadio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hey everybody, welcome back. You're listening to Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys, from Catherine Lombardi and Stage Left Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is Pam Schoenfeld. She's a nutritionist with the Weston Price Foundation, and she works with Heritage Foods USA, of which we are big supporters.
Pam, you promised that you would tell us before the last break about how we can make better choices and how we can avoid trans fats and some of the foods that clearly are creating some of the health problems for us in this generation.
Okay, I'm happy to do that. It's going to take a little bit of work, but once you sniff out your sources, then you just continue to buy them. I personally, if I bake or I serve baked foods, I bake a lot myself, but I don't eat a lot of baked goods, but my son enjoys it. But anyway, the first thing I would do if you enjoy really good stuff is try to find a good local bakery and ask them, do you use butter, and what items are butter in? Is butter in? Or do you use lard? Mm-hmm. Use real lard in your pie crust. Hopefully they'll tell you the truth. Mm-hmm. Because they should be proud of that. I mean,
Sure. Most
bakeries are proud of the fact that they use butter. I think it'll be changing. I know the best chefs use leaf lard, but, you know, bakeries don't actually necessarily use that because of the cost.
Right.
But so that would be the first thing I would do.
So, again, ask the question at your local bakery and ask if they're using butter and or lard.
And that's good, not
and
bad.
And those are things that you should be looking for to avoid trans fats.
Mm-hmm. And tell them you're allergic to certain vegetable fats. People are afraid of that word allergy,
mm-hmm.
excuse me, because they don't want any lawsuits. So they'll probably be likely to be more honest with you.
Yeah, I don't go for that. Just because there are people who really are allergic and that's treated with. I mean, when we're in a restaurant and someone says allergy, I mean, we send alarm bells off to make sure that utensils don't cross-contaminate.
Okay.
You know, you send a place, if it's a responsible place, to exaggerate that you just don't want it, really sends them through a hoop. But just say, listen, I don't want this. I want butter.
Okay.
I
mm-hmm.
want lard. Because I think a lot of bakers and restaurateurs are out there avoiding it because they're afraid that people will react negatively.
Well, My father owned a pastry shop when I was very, very young and lived in Canada in the late 60s, early 70s. And I remember how much better those foods tasted than traditional bakeries and other bakeries that I've gone to in the past.
Well, the non-traditional bakeries.
I'm sorry, the non-traditional bakeries. The bakeries that have come to the fore here in the United States in the last 20 years or so. And the reason is using real ingredients,
mm-hmm.
using butter, using lard, things that have kind of fallen away. And I think if we go to our local bakeries, that's your front line, your local restaurants, your local bakeries, and ask for these things. I think Pam's got a great idea, because what will happen when people start asking for these things?
They'll supply them. They have to.
Absolutely.
Well, and you were giving us some other sources. Now, Heritage Foods USA, which you can link to on our website as well, is a good source to buy some of the stuff at home, right?
Yeah, you can get the leaf lard from their site, and it sounds like a really good product. I have yet to use their leaf lard, but I'm looking forward to doing that. I actually have some lard in my fridge right now that I've gotten when I drive out to Pennsylvania periodically to get things from certain people that I buy stuff from.
Now, describe for people what you mean by leaf lard.
I believe, you know, I'm not a chef per mm-hmm. se, but it's the lard that actually forms around the kidneys
mm-hmm.
of the pig, and
mm-hmm.
that actually has some favorable properties for Shortening, the word is shortening, meaning the shortening of gluten fibers in the wheat flour when you've added the water. And it somehow it makes it a lighter, fluffier product. I would not use that for frying because you don't, that, you know, that characteristic is not necessary. And the extra expense is, you know, why would you go to that expense? But one thing I do is I make beef stock from soup bones, and I'll skim the fat off the top of the beef soup itself, and I'll save that to saute potatoes and, like, making hash browns.
You know, and when you start using this stuff, I mean, it sounds like we've been sort of led to believe that we should throw that away because it's gooky, you know, and that somehow that's not clean, and what we should do is buy something out of a clean container from the market. But when you're talking about great cooking, you're talking about cooking that utilizes the whole animal, and it just makes better flavor and more interesting flavor.
And that's, you know, interesting. I was doing some research on the Okinawans, and now I'm jumping back to the health thing. But the Okinawans, everybody knows they're this long-lived culture on an island off Japan. And they actually, now I'm getting call waiting, so hopefully...
That's okay, it'll go away.
They actually eat quite a bit of pork, and they eat all of the pork. They don't let anything go to waste. And that's what Weston Price found in his research, that almost every native population that were not trading with, you know, Western nations was using every aspect of the animal. And they valued the animal, and they didn't, you know, it was they didn't just throw the bones away. They cooked the bones into soup, you know, like any good restaurant
would do. Of course.
You know?
Full utilization of the animals is respectful to the animals as well as good for the consumer. I want you to give us another area where I think people are, have been falling down because they don't know that there's trans fats in their in the products that they're buying.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of the baked cookies and stuff that come from the markets are full of trans fats, and we... You know, we see vegetable fat, and we think that's great. I mean, even things like granola bars, which people think are a great substitute for kids for breakfast, they've got trans fats in them. And, you know, different fast food places. Now, I don't know about regular restaurants, how much fast trans fats are used in regular restaurants, because I think it varies depending on the restaurant.
Definitely varies depending on the restaurant.
Certainly the cheaper ones, you're going to get what you pay for, which is not the good ingredients. You're not going to get it, because they can't produce the food. The prices of the cheaper restaurants are artificially low.
Sure. Well, because, you know, when you have these, it's not possible to produce quality food for a less expensive price. And listen, when you talk about the difference between the kind of pigs we're talking about that you get from Heritage Foods USA, yeah, they're more than twice as expensive as the kind of pig that you get. But listen, that's a pig that was out in a field as opposed to a pig that was kept in a little cage and was, you know, your food shouldn't come from a place that is disgusting.
Well,
and
you know,
that if you ever saw it, you would say, oh, my God, I want no food like that.
I know a farmer who used to work in a pig factory. So
I want to come back and talk more and talk about this with you more after the break. Our guest is Pam Schoenfeld. She's a nutritionist with the Weston Price Foundation, and she also works with Heritage Foods USA. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1155. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Our guest is Pam Schoenfeld, and we've been talking. She's a nutritionist, and she works with the Weston Price Foundation and also Heritage Foods USA. And we were talking before about how these pigs that we're talking about, our topic of our show today is pork fat can be good for you. Isn't that wonderful news? Isn't that great news? But when we're talking about pigs that are pasture-raised pigs as opposed to agribusiness pigs, and Pam, you were making a point before the break about the differences between the two.
You can't even compare. I mean, it's oh, man. I think if you saw this, I have two friends, one that's a farmer and one that was an accountant, and the farmer used to raise the pigs, and he got so disgusted by the whole thing he had to get out of the business, and now he raises meats out in Lawrenceville on pasture, and they're doing pretty well out there. My friend that was an accountant had to do inventory of chicken, those chicken factories, and she said she had to run through at top speed through the barns because the stench was overwhelming.
Awful.
And they were, and the beaks were taken off, and they were, and she was telling me things. I'm like, you read these things in a, you know, a newspaper article or whatever, and you almost don't believe them.
And then you go, to a barn full of misery and suffering with mutilated, filthy animals, and that's where most of your agribusiness meat comes from. But there is an alternative. And you know, I just, if you want to go to our website, there are two great animated and fun graphics that you can download. On the bottom of the website at restaurantguysradio.com, there's the Meatrix, and there's the Meatrix 2, and that will give you a really good idea of what it exactly it is that Pam and Mark and I are talking about.
And unfortunately, most of the meat in your supermarket is the meat that we're talking about that's raised in barns and not allowed to see the sun and doesn't get the vitamin D that we talked about earlier in the show.
And it's cheaper to do that. If you want a family farm on a farmer raising a pig the way a pig is meant to be raised and therefore giving you good and healthy meat, it's going to cost you more.
But it's going to cost you more now, but it's going to save you in the end.
In the hospital bills.
Your health is going to be so much improved. I mean, I can't tell you. I'm 48, and I don't feel really any older than when I was 30. I feel better than I did 10 years ago.
You know what? I feel like an old man, but that's just because I own a restaurant. Hey, Pam, we've got to run. The hour is up. We've enjoyed having you. Thanks for coming on the show to talk with us.
Great.
And we're going to link on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. We're going to link you to information about Pam, to the Weston Price Foundation. Of course, you can always go and link to Heritage Foods USA. Sign on there, buy some lard, cook up a pie. It'll be delicious. You'll be very happy. Hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.